Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Let's see here. We've got three lawyers, and I believe only one for the appellants, right?
That's correct, John.
Okay, very well. All right, and when we get to the appellees, you are each going to have 5 minutes. Is that my understanding? Is that correct? Very well.
Right.
Okay. Did you say it, Ivic? Is that correct?
Ivy, Your Honor.
Ivy, I apologize. I got a different. Okay, very well. Please proceed.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, in this case, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, Your Honor.
Very well. Keep your eye on the clock.
I will. In this case, I think the only applicable question for review is whether it would have been futile for the court to allow the appellant to amend the complaint. And
can we make that determination where, I mean, the district court didn't make a finding of futility, or did it?
It did not.
On the amended complaint. So should we go in and make that determination, or should we just send this back to the district court?
I would submit that you should send it back to the district court. And I raised that, the issue of futility, because that was one of the factors that is suggested that the court would review. But
can I take a step back? There was a trial in the state court on the negligence claim scheduled for July. It looked like from the court records that had been pushed off till later this month or maybe next month. Is that what's the status of that negligence trial?
So that case is set for September 26.
If you were unsuccessful at trial in the negligence case, would that have an impact on this case? Because presumably, if you can't meet the negligence standard, you at least in the way this is set up, you wouldn't be able to have a constitutional claim. So wouldn't that show futility at that point?
Probably. I haven't analyzed that thoroughly, but I do.
But your point is, that doesn't really matter because the trial got pushed off, so we don't know what's going to happen.
Right, we don't know. And I mean, there are different standards, but that's
you have additional facts. Do you have additional facts other than what's in the amended complaint? I mean, if we send this back, would you file a new amended complaint that included additional facts beyond what was already presented to the district court?
We would. We've learned substantially more than what we knew at the time. I think that's one of our frustrations, I think, and at least one of the reasons we would urge we be given that opportunity, because we weren't allowed to, at that point, to develop the theory. We weren't allowed to, of course, do any discovery, but I think we at least had said enough to give an inference that we would have been able to develop the theory of deliberate indifference. And I think we can develop the theory of deliberate indifference in this case. And I think we should be allowed at least.
Tell me what the, actually this is two questions. What's your best evidence in the amended complaint that you submitted of deliberate indifference? And then the second part of the question is, what's your best evidence that you've learned since the amended complaint to support deliberate indifference?
Well, what we didn't know at the time of the amended complaint, that the city had removed negligently, this is certainly, we admit that they removed the no pedestrian crossing signs at this location negligently. When they removed the no pedestrian crossing signs, it allowed Julian to cross the street in the location where he crossed legally. And this location was the most direct access to the bus stop. But what we didn't know is that the city had a policy, is essentially the city did not have a pedestrian traffic sign inventory. Without that inventory, the city would not have been able to recognize that the signs had been removed, that the city had no policy or practice of inspecting their pedestrian safety signs. And that's customary in cities, but Pomona did not have one. And we also have learned that the city had done a study of this particular intersection, and it recognized that it was the second most dangerous intersection in the city of Pomona. And yet, all of these things were happening, and the city had not taken any action to address the fact that the bus was stopped, that the city had allowed, was placed in this very dangerous position. These were deliberate decisions made by the city. And so we know all of this now, and how we're thinking.
So the only defendant here is City of Pomona, right? You have not named
it. No, City of Pomona and Foothill Bus Company.
And what?
And Foothill Transit. It's the bus company.
But you don't have any individual... I suppose Foothill Bus Company, that's a different deliberate indifference standard you're trying to make. They didn't have a control over what the city did. But you don't name any individual city officials. And I guess my question is, is it ever legally possible for the city as an entity to have deliberate indifference, because it requires a subjective intent? Don't you have to be talking about individual... I mean, the city might be liable, but don't you have to be talking about individual actors of the city that would... And maybe you're just saying they have respondeat superior liability for the actions of specific city officials.
No, I'm really talking about their custom and their policies, the lack of the policies for the city, which in effect, one can say is a custom. And that's what's at stake here, and that these customs were integral, and these policies were integral in causing this accident to occur. That's and I believe under the authorities that we've discussed, that the entity can be liable for its policies, practices, and customs.
You're talking about under Monell liability?
I'm talking about under liability for deliberate indifference.
But I mean, you're saying that the city would be liable based on the Monell case, the custom and practice?
Well, I don't know that I would cite it as so much as Monell, because Monell deals with liability for individual actors. So it's not vicarious liability as such, but it is that the policy or practice was the moving force of the individual actor.
So saying the same thing as my colleague is, really have to have some individuals involved here, do you not, to have deliberate indifference? Or you're saying that they can be at the high level of the city as an entity can be deliberately indifferent?
Well, I think that there is, there most certainly are individual actors involved, and those individual actors, city employees, were guided by the customs and practices of the city. And those customs and practice were the moving forces for the conduct that they engaged in. So in that respect, a Monell theory would be applicable.
Okay. You wanted to save 2 minutes. We're a little under that now. Do you want to save the balance of your time for rebuttal?
I do.
Very well. All right. Mr. Cronenberg, I guess you're up first, and you've got the Golden Gate Bridge in back of you. So we're expecting big things from you.
Let's just say it comes with the Zoom package, but I appreciate it. Good morning, Your Honor. Your Honors, my name is Will Cronenberg, and I represent Foothill Transit in this case. In this case, as you can tell from the briefs, it stems from a tragic accident. As the court has noted in prior cases this morning, there are some very sympathetic facts. Unfortunately, it is still a garden variety negligence case. The core fact is we have a pedestrian crossing a dark street mid-block, and when Mr. Ivey argues that it's a legal crossing, it is not, mid-block, who is hit by a car. The district court properly found that this does not implicate the 14th Amendment. And while it is true that when considering a motion to dismiss, the court must accept as true all well-pleaded factual allegations, it is equally true the district court is not required to accept as true allegations that are conclusory, unwarranted, or unreasonable inferences.
Counsel, let me just cut to the chase on this. You have a pretty compelling argument. There's no question about it. This does seem like a negligence case. It's hard to imagine how plaintiff will be able to plead facts that satisfy deliberate indifference. The problem here is that the district court didn't really engage in that on the amended complaint. I mean, you agree with that, right? The district court didn't actually look at the amended complaint and make a finding of futility, or that it didn't. It just said case closed.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And so what, I mean, there's some reluctance perhaps to send this back if we could make that independent determination of futility, but why shouldn't we just send this back and tell the district court, stop doing this. Do your job the first time, and then we don't have to go through this whole rigmarole.
Well, I'm not sure that you have to send it back. It seems to me that the proposed amended complaint is before this court right now.
But aren't we just incentivizing district courts to punt to us and just say, look, I don't want to engage. I don't want to do my job in the first instance. I'll let the Court of Appeals do it. And
I'm sorry to speak over you, Your Honor. I don't know that I recognize the concern, but I don't know that this practice is that commonplace. It seems to me
all the more reason for us to kind of draw a line in the sand and say, look, you may not have to give him an amended complaint, but you've got to at least grapple with it substantively in some way.
Well, I mean, we've cited the court to the Schreiber case, which, you know, as involves a RICO claim, but it is, you know, true that in granting a motion to dismiss, the amended complaint may be denied. I mean, the attempt to amend may be denied by the district court if it determines the allegations of fact consistent with the challenge pleading could not cure the deficiency. And at the end of the day, what we have here, no matter how you artfully try to plead it, you have a pedestrian crossing a street. It is a garden variety negligence claim.
Even though that's true, the fact is the court didn't say that. The court didn't say this is futile. You can't reach this. And that's what we struggle with, is at least under our case law and certainly our understanding. In effect, he's entitled to at least one bite of the apple. He didn't get that here.
Well, he did get one.
In the sense of an amendment, that's what I mean by the – I know he got the initial complaint, but he
– Well, if – I agree, Your Honor, that – but it is not the law that everyone gets an opportunity to amend the complaint.
But don't they at least get the opportunity to have their first amended complaint looked at and dealt with substantively? I think that's the concern here. I don't think this would have been a heavy lift. I think the district court, looking at it, could have said, yeah, your amended complaint is no better than your first complaint, and it's gone. But he didn't do that. And so can you cite us to a case where there was no substantive analysis of a first amended complaint and the Court of Appeals engaged in the futility analysis you're asking us to engage in the first instance?
I cannot.
Okay.
I cannot. And my I've got the rest of my argument, but my time is ticking here. I recognize the court's concern, but what we're really talking about is something that becomes a pro forma review, because the facts are the facts and they can't be changed.
Okay.
So, Your Honor, I'm going to have to yield the rest of my time to my colleague, Mr. Quiller.
Indeed. All right. You said Quiller, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Quiller, like a pen, like a quill.
Very well.
Quiller.
We'll look forward to your writing in an inscrutable manner.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thank you very much for your time. I think a lot has been said, but I did want to address what is your most pressing issue. So it is true that the district court judge did not address the futility. And I also understand your concern that implicitly from your comments that this is a common occurrence, and you you all want the district court judges to do their job. On the other side of that is, what effect does that have on the city of Pomona and Foothill? Now, while you may disagree with the district court judge's posture, you are now having these two public entities stay in this federal lawsuit, which is supplemental of the state lawsuit. And quite frankly, the most important facts in this case were already in the complaint. Mr. Bryant.
Well, but there are additional facts, both in the amended complaint and what they've learned subsequently. I tend to agree that that probably does not satisfy deliberate indifference. But why shouldn't the district court grapple with that? Let me ask you the same question I asked your co-defense counsel. Do you have any case where the district court has failed to grapple substantively with an amended complaint? It's come up on appeal, and we have engaged in that futility analysis in the first instance.
I do not, not because one does not exist, but that was not an issue that was necessarily raised. But on the other side of the coin, there also is no case holding that there's a 14th Amendment right in this particular case. And in fact, when you look at, there's this case 13, Hamel versus Tri-City Metro. I mean, it explicitly already states that there is no right. Let me read the quote for you.
But with respect, we really get back, we're kind of going around in circles here. You're saying that this is such an obvious case, the district court didn't need to say, this is an obvious case, it's futile. He didn't do that, or she didn't do that. And so what we're really struck with here is either we, as a court of appeal, has to go through the futility analysis, or we send it back to the district court. And that's what we're struggling with. I don't know of any case that says that we, as the court of appeal, should be undertaking the futility analysis. You may be absolutely right. That the city and Foothill are going to win absolutely at the pleading stage. But whether you are or not, we're struggling with why we're in the midst of having to make a decision about futility when the district court didn't do so.
And again, Your Honor, I don't know if there's any cases that says that you should, but there are plenty of cases that say that you can. And that's where the standard review comes into play.
What are those cases? That's what I'd like to see a roadmap for a case that's done what you're asking us to do. So when you say that we can, what's that case?
Okay, so more specifically, not that you can circumvent the district court's duty. I'm not suggesting that.
No, I understand.
But when it comes on appeal, you are looking at the dismissal de novo, okay? And it says that you can look at them de novo. That would be, for example, Arizona Students Association versus Arizona Board of Regents.
Okay, and so you're just relying on cases that say that we can affirm for an alternate basis in the record, which is fair. That's your best argument for why we should undertake it. I just want to be clear, because we see these cases come up, and sometimes we kick them back for a very technical procedural issue, and then the parties go out and settle. That's fine, but I don't want, assuming we go the route we're going, I don't want that message to be that we think that the plaintiffs have a really strong case here. This is, in my view, this is a very technical matter. I don't think it would require a huge burden from the city to go in and file another motion to dismiss and ask the court, with our direction, to engage in a substantive analysis, so.
Very well. You're almost out of time. Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
No, Your Honor. Just accept that last thing. The additional facts that Mr. Ivey stated today, and those are facts in the amended complaint, just to reiterate, do not rise to that level. But again, there's no case that we found regarding your specific question as to whether or not you can allow the district court to punt and have you guys do the work.
Very well. Thank you. All right, Mr. Ivey, you have a little time left for rebuttal. I think your microphone is off. There you go.
I'm sorry.
There you go.
I'm sorry. We were warned that somebody would forget that. And I did. I apologize. I've heard your comments, and I, I would certainly urge that that would be the direction that the court would go. Part of the process of pleading and having interaction with the court is that you learn, and you get an opportunity perhaps to do better and to really make the case. I'm not lost in the fact that this is a challenge, but I think that given opportunity, we have a reasonable chance of making that challenge. One of the things that as to Foothill that we've learned has been the person that was in charge of placing the bus stops, the transit planner, for instance, had absolutely no training in locating bus stops, and despite the recommendations of the safety manager, declined to move the bus stop, which was only 70 feet away, to a safe location. And those things, I believe, are shocking. And at least we should be able to have an opportunity to make the case and to develop the theory. And maybe we won't be successful, but I think that we can be. And I do think that that's an exercise that happens at the district level and not at the level of the Court of Appeal. So I would submit it and thank you, Honors, for your time and attention.
Thank you. Any other questions by my colleague? Okay. Thanks to all three counsel in the case just argued. That case is submitted.